If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, we're back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamara. We got Ricky on the board. We have S&P futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 65. Down, wow. We haven't been down. I'm not so sure they're going to stay down, but we're down right now by a little bit. So I wouldn't worry about it much. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, living the dream every single day of my life.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff going on, and well. I was just reading here, I was reminded, as we have a pretty big two-day, really big two-day rally after the election of former president, now president-elect Trump, and, you know, it's funny how it's kind of somewhat of a knee-jerk, well, not a knee-jerk. The market thinks that it's going to be better for business and all this other kinds of stuff. But the market is not immune. Now, I come from the Chicago school, and this is what things that I think have changed in the world. I mean, if somebody heard somebody groaning in the executive bathroom, those people felt that information would be out in a second, that stock would be down $2 and nobody would know why. That information flew around, and the market was always right. And I think as time has gone by, and I've seen how much information some people get and some people don't, and those kinds of things, I'm not so sure. In the long run, I still am a believer that the market is always right, but in the short term, it can react. Now, I'm not talking about this week. What I'm talking about is something similar to this. Is backing up. Not many people were around on Friday, August 13th. Maybe that was a tell, Kevin. On Friday, August 13th, 1971, Nixon imposed wage and price controls. Did a bunch of stuff. Nixon directed Treasury Secretary Connally to suspend, with certain exceptions, the convertibility of the dollar into gold or the reserve assets, ordering the gold window to be closed, such that foreign governments could no longer exchange their dollars for gold, meaning he was going to put more money in the system. Nixon issued Executive Order 11615, pursuant to the Economic Stabilization Act of 1970, imposing a 90-day freeze on wages and prices, and I think they got extended, in order to counter inflation. This was the first time the U.S. government has enacted wage and price controls since the Korean War. Now, this sounds familiar. An import surcharge, meaning tariff, of 10% was set to ensure that American products would not be at a disadvantage because of the expected fluctuation in exchange rates. And I'm going to say for the next 2 to 3 days, my memory is a little wobbly, had one of the most bullish three sessions in the market history to that time. Yet a month later, everybody realized what a horse bleep policy this was and went right back the other way. Now, I'm not comparing that to today at all. What I'm saying is just because a market initial reaction might be up or down to something, it doesn't necessarily mean that the policy or anything is good or bad, because I think most economists looking back at it would say that this policy is one of the worst anybody ever put out there. But again, even reading these types of things, and you and I have been jousting about this seems fairly straightforward, right? Posing a 90-day freeze on wages and prices. But somehow, Kevin, in one of my economics classes at Notre Dame, I believe, and that's September and October, I forget who the hell teacher that I had, somebody essentially got copies or made us read, there was no internet at the time, all the detail on these wage and price controls and how ridiculously detailed it turned out to be. Somebody must have been slaving away for like a week, 24/7, coming up with every conceivable thing. Well, you couldn't. It just didn't freeze your gasoline prices. I mean, that would be what the dum-dums of the world would think would happen, or what the thing says, right? If the price came to you higher because the price from Saudi Arabia was higher, and it was detailed along the line. You could then maintain your margin over what it was. It was so freaking complicated to the point where it almost didn't even work. I mean, that if you were in the right industries, you got a carve out. Now, this morning I was driving in, and sometimes you hear stuff on the radio, and they were talking about tariffs on China. And they were talking about, the lady was talking about firms have already in the process of leaving, because they've kind of been leaving anyway, but now they're going to go faster.
Well, the tariffs never went away when Biden got elected.
Actually, they're probably up from there, aren't they? No?
Don't know.
But so they're.
I think so.
So one of the guys was saying I know nothing about cat litter, Kevin, other than I've bought it a few times for people that needed it. Evidently, there's some cat litter evidently is imported a lot from China. But whatever chemical is in there, again, I know nothing about cat litter, is sourced in China. Now, is that guy going to hire a lobbyist and say, wait a minute, how can the tariffs be on me when the only reason why I can sell cat litter is I'm buying the stuff over here, and this is where they have it. Now, are we flooded today with a bunch of idiots calling, emailing? I guess some people still old enough to call. Or lobbyists saying, "Hey, get me out of this mess. I need an exception." What's the final thing going to look like? I mean, every time this happens, people get this idea that we're just going to screw these Chinese people. Kevin, it's not. Sometimes we might. Sometimes we might not. Depends. I mean, the flurry of detail in this stuff is dramatic. And I wish we were lobbyists, buddy. I think we'd be making more money. Just saying.
Yeah, I think, though, if you look at back on the first Trump term, you will find that tariffs were mostly a bargaining chip. So it we'll come back to China in a second. But if you look at how they were used with Mexico,
Tell that to these.
Let me finish. That when you in Mexico, they were a bargaining chip to force the new U.S.-Canada trade agreement, and they were also a bargaining chip to get his way at the border, to get so that the remain in Mexico to stick, and the safe third country and all of that. And so they didn't happen, but they were used as a threat. In China's case, they were also used as a threat to negotiate an agreement. And if you remember, we had there was supposedly a multi-phase trade agreement, and we got the first part of it done, and then the second part of it was being negotiated when the COVID virus came along.
Yeah, it stopped a lot of stuff, obviously. But
and so that put that ground everything to a halt and left the tariffs that were in place there. But if they had continued and negotiated their phase two agreement, whatever that was going to be, then the tariffs would have been lifted.
Well, it buried.
So I think that's how Trump sees them, as they're not something to put in place permanently. They are instead something to use as a bargaining chip.
Well, it was, they were there long enough to bury an awful lot of soybean farmers in the upper Midwest that were
exporting. I understand. You put them in place, it's going to hurt somebody for a while.
Yeah, and as long as, in some way, it's okay.
I do think it's important to understand what he's doing with it, not just to say, well, he's going to put down tariffs and they're just going to stay there forever. Maybe they will, and in the case of the ones with China, it turned out that way.
Well, I mean, we've joked on the show a bunch of times, and it's not really a joke, but it sort of is.
Oh, it's really funny stuff.
Well, it's not funny. What do you think, I'm a clown? No, not that kind of funny.
Do I amuse you?
Do I amuse you? Do you think I'm a clown? What was that from? Goodfellas?
Goodfellas, yeah. Goodfellas.
But I asked the question like a bunch of times, and I don't know the answer, but it's almost... And people think that both of us sometimes, Kevin, we have experience that, I don't know, maybe in some kind of ways, I mean, yours is the banking experience, but mine between the trading floor and manufacturing, we get a real experience of how clever people are at work. They used to call them workarounds in Pullman.
Sure.
or be on the trading floor, somebody would find a way to get around some rule or something. People always find a way, whatever the new rule is, how am I going to get around it? So I've joked a few times, but it's really not a joke. I'm not trying to amuse people. We come out of China with a ship loaded with some crap, maybe some of which we really need here. Because, I mean, what Carl and Lou were saying last week about how much stuff that we use and things we really need here, the little crap that nobody even talks about, this little plug, this little transistor, this little, you know, wire that just happens to cut the voltage down to, I mean, a real lot of that stuff is just not even made here. But so, okay, a ship comes out of China and you go by Vietnam or Thailand. Do you have to wave to shore? do you have to unload it and load it back up on another ship? Can you unload it and load it back up on the same ship? I mean, I never got an answer.
There are ways to track product movement versus ship movement. But what, you know, what we saw happen when tariffs were in place for China for quite some time is you started to see Chinese companies go set up shop in a place like Vietnam.
Yeah. Now
it was a Vietnamese product. Now is that undermining the effect of what's happening on China? Somewhat, yeah, because the profits are going back to China. What's not going to China though is the employment, and that's a problem for a government that has to keep people happy.
Well, I mean, you brought up the point. There's got to be some rule. There's got to be something in there. It says, okay, the company is set up in Vietnam. I mean, I'm pretty good at this, Kevin.
If you cause them to move production to Vietnam, you've extracted your pound of flesh.
Okay, well, we moved the Starbucks to London from Amsterdam, and yet we still had all the profit coming to Amsterdam, right?
Well, that's accounting. Accounting and production are different things.
But my question I'm getting to here is, okay, what does it take for this product to be now considered Vietnamese? Does it have to be a Vietnamese corporation? Does it have to be assembled in Vietnam? Does every part have to be made in Vietnam? I mean, there's a long list of questions there that I'm sure somebody's working on right now.
Right? Well, we got a new chief of staff. She's probably got people on it.
But I'm saying, hopefully she's good. But my point is, how much...
Her reputation, but I mean, she is. We'll see.
But I mean, if you were to say, we're going to put stuff on Chinese goods, but not Vietnam, right? You and I, if we're in that business, we're going to walk into that room with a list of 20 questions. Well, my new firm is now a Vietnamese corporation, and we have a plant there, and we're assembling the cars. But the transmissions and the motors and blah, blah, blah are still made in China. Now, is that okay? It's assembled in Vietnam. What does that mean? I mean, I'm pretty good at this, Kevin, because I know when you talk about people who manufacture railroad cars, no, you don't. You assemble them. You may put the sides and the roof and the floor together, but you're hanging on somebody else's air conditioner. You're buying the trucks, which are a lot of the car, from somebody else. You're buying the lights from somebody else. You're buying the seats from somebody else. Now, if I build that railroad car here in Chicago, yet the trucks are coming from Mexico, the seats are coming from China, the lights are coming from Japan, is this really an American manufactured when 70% of the stuff in it is coming from other places? I mean, the definitions here are dramatic, and it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of people trying to find a way around it, I guarantee you. Just saying. It doesn't make us bad. It's just the way people are.
People are good at finding their way, you know. Reggie Jackson, I didn't make the rules, I'm just taking advantage of them.
Yeah, I mean, but so when people hear something like, all right, we're going to punish China with tariffs, if you said something about some market or some, you talk about drug, how to make drug stuff, and we're not going to let this chemical process happen, Kevin, you could run that right by me. I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. I just assume that it's going to be a good rule or a good law. Maybe not. But, I mean, people are terrified.
I never assume that.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, what do people really think? What are we talking about? Are we moving the corporate headquarters to Vietnam? Are we waving to them from the ship? Are we just unloading it and loading it back? I mean, I just came up with 15 questions right now. I have no idea how to answer them. Do you?
I got all the answers, Tom, but I'm not sharing them. You know, you're going to have to get them out of me one at a time, you know, just to keep the show interesting.
Yeah, well, I got my question regarding, talking about shifting, My question regarding the Bulls, who I foolishly watched again last night. If you turn the ball over constantly and you play no defense, why do you want to speed the game up?
There's something to be said for sucking at the speed of light.
Yeah. I mean, why don't I run down the floor faster so I have 30 turnovers instead of 20? Some of the logic here, as I get older, the logic just escapes me a little bit.
Pretty much the logic of anything the Bulls do escapes me.
Yeah,
so.
I don't...
Hey, a different question, just a follow-up. You talked to Lou about this a little bit yesterday, and you talked to me about it. And I just want to make sure we're clear that for anybody who thinks that Harris lost the election due to misogyny or perhaps due to a combination of misogyny and racism, who are we accusing when we say that?
Anybody who thinks that way.
Well, anybody who thinks that way, but you're not accusing Republicans or conservatives of that because there is no Republican or conservative who would vote for any candidate, male or female, white or black, who has her policies and advocates for her policies. Which means if she's a victim of people who won't who otherwise would have voted for her but wouldn't vote for her because she's a woman, those are Democrats that didn't vote for her.
There's a lot of people in the middle. A lot of people in the middle.
Well, okay. Just as long as we know we're not accusing the conservatives of that problem.
In the last six elections, I'm 2-2-2. Two Democrats, two Republicans, and two Libertarians. So where does that put me? Other than confused.
Put you behind the mic right now.
Yeah, but confused.
But the point of clarity is what you're really saying is, we're not accusing conservatives of this, and I just want to make sure we're very clear about that. Because I think there's a common conception that people say, yeah, those wascally conservatives would never vote for a woman. And there's no proof of that in this election. The proof in this election, because the conservatives would never vote for anybody with her policies.
The only way you're going to get proof.
So if you're saying she's a victim of people who won't vote for a woman, it's coming from someplace else than the right.
I said it's when you're the first at anything, you have a little bit of a barrier to cross. She wasn't good enough to cross it. I mean, I'm fair with that. I mean,
I just want to throw that out there. I want to make sure we understand.
But
it's not just here, Tom. The pundit world is all a Twitter with that one. That they think that she's a victim of misogyny, and I'm sitting here thinking, you realize you're accusing your own people of that.
Unless you know what's in each individual's mind, you can't really figure out why. I'm going to say that an awful lot of young ladies, now I can accuse them because they've told me this, didn't vote for Trump because he's an old white guy creep. Okay, they don't want to vote for an old white guy. I mean, it's not only one way.
No, I understand.
I mean, I had somebody in Audrey's family, not close or anything, but her boyfriend is a guy who was a former pilot. And I meet him, and, you know, he's a nice enough guy, so we're talking, and he says, so, you know, I'm very conservative. And I go, okay. He said, no, I'm real conservative. And I'm thinking, was there some secret handshake here I'm supposed to know? I don't know. And I go, so you're like a, this is, you know, years ago. I said, so you're like a Trumper. Oh, yeah. I said, well.
He's not conservative.
Well, whatever. Well, he says, why do you like.
People consider Trump to be a classical conservative.
Well, but he.
Or a non-classical conservative.
I'm saying, why do you like Trump? Well, that's easy. He hates Hillary. He hates liberals. He hates minorities. He lowers my taxes. And what was the fifth? I said, well, you got 3 out of 5 hates in there. there are people that take the high road, people take the low road. Kevin, you have no idea why. I talked to this Hispanic guy in the building yesterday, and he was not so much disappointed at the outcome of the election, but he says, I can't believe how many people in my neighborhood voted the way they did because they were just convinced the immigrants were getting more than we are. Now, you can say, or other people can say, that message didn't resonate, but it did. And a lot of people feel, This is not new, Kevin. This is not new. I've said before, in a lot of, I mean, most people define welfare as something other people get and not them, and they never actually look in the mirror and see how much they might have gotten. I mean, it's a rare thing. I mean, we had Tom Foley came to speak at the CBOE. Not speaking, we had a, what do you call it, like a little breakfast thing where you get the cookies and the and donuts and a
breakfast thing.
Yeah, breakfast thing. And you know, and he was talking, you know, this is very conservative people. And Foley's a Democrat, and they said something about Tip O'Neill. Well, what about Tip O'Neill? I probably told you this before. And Foley goes, he goes, Tip is a big Irish guy. He wasn't afraid of anybody or anything. He was just one of those guys. He goes to this super conservative thing one night, and I go, Tipper, like, are you bringing a bodyguard? He goes, nah, I'm fine. Off he goes, and of course he's met with this, you know, grumpy crowd that he's, you know, this and this and this. And so he goes, well, you know, I know where I'm at. I know I'm in a room where people here, you know, walk to school themselves every day. Never had a free bus ride. You pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. You went to college. You just had the other thing, and now you're here, and nobody ever helped you. Yeah. The whole place. You know, in this, he goes, let me ask you this: how many people here went to school on a GI Bill? Like half of them. He says, and also we got this new thing called Medicare. How many of you people here have had a? By the way, the people have been paying into now for like 3 or 4 years, so not a lot of money. How many people here have had a parent that have had like a major surgery in the last 5 years that they didn't pay for, and neither did you? Like the other hands go up. And all of a sudden, the whole tone of the room changed. People started to realize, you know what, some of this stuff, we all benefit from different stuff. We just assume that the other guy is getting more. And that's, and my point, and Kevin, you know, since we started doing the show and why I do it, is the stresses, the economic stresses that we've been putting on people for the last 20 or 25 years, they're going to have their outcomes. And if all of a sudden inflation, like you and I were talking yesterday, or the other day, if inflation is all of a sudden starts up again and it's blamed on Trump, dump that guy to the curb as quick as they did the last guy. I mean, all of a sudden everybody's got this idea that people are benefiting and not them. And when you have a growth that is, I'm going to say the growth has been non-existent for the last 20 years, that the people's attitude on all sides, not every person, not every minute of every day, is that the only way you get ahead now is to somehow be a sleazebag because we're not all growing together. Because we're not. These economic stresses, I mean, we could have our buddy Dr. Blade on. He's going to agree with me. I talked to him a couple weeks ago. I've never seen the economic stress pervading a society, the U.S. society, like it is now. Maybe during the Depression, we weren't alive. Probably during the Depression, but we weren't alive then. I mean, there's a lot of problems here that we need to find a way to get everybody sort of on the same page and moving the place forward at 3-3.5% a year, so we can work our way out of this ridiculous price level. And can't we do it by the Democratic plan. I'm not so sure we can do it under the current Republican plan. The only way we're going to do it is that people be able to get together and sit down and figure out what the hell we're doing. And I don't see that sort of, I won't use the term camaraderie. You don't care if you like anybody. I don't know if we have. Maybe we haven't hit bottom yet or something. I don't know. It seems weird to me. I mean, it's just all my life experience saying, I don't mind Trump being in there, but he better do something that we all need to have happen, not just a few. The idea that right now when you're broke that we're gonna lower taxes. Well, yesterday they hit some buffoon on, I'll use the term guardedly, talking about, with Trump in there, we're going to have, this guy's on TV. He's going to let the oil diggers dig, and we're going to lower prices. Now, the oil companies, if the prices do go down to $50 a barrel, by the way, are not going to keep digging. I mean, this guy has no knowledge of any of this crap. And then, you know, and that's going to lower gas prices, which is going to lower inflation, so we're all back together again. And I'm going, Kevin, where did that guy learn his economics? Kmart? I mean, do people actually believe that crap?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because we don't teach economics very well. And as Carl just said, chat put in the chat, there's really no way to work our way out of it with the GDP and wage growth.
Well, we had a guy yesterday who's the chairman of the Federal Reserve come on and talk about wage growth in the last 2 or 3 years. Now, if you listen to Stacks and Jacks and you listen to Carl every Friday, you find out that the hourly wage has indeed gone up. But our chairman forgot the part that Carl doesn't leave out, that the actual weekly paycheck is going down because people are working less hours. Now, how does he not know that, and how does he just leave that little piece out? Just for grins or what?
No, he knows, but he's trying to paint. Let me come up with a nice way to say he's trying to throw some BS our way. I get wanting to have a positive message, there's a difference between a BS positive message and being realistic, telling people the truth, and then trying to exude some optimism that we can get past this, that we can get out of it. And you know what Powell doesn't understand, what a lot of politicians don't understand, is that just blowing sunshine up your butt isn't the way to go. People follow optimism. That they'll gravitate to optimism, and that's really important in a leader. So I don't want to diminish that as a goal. It's just that they know when there's lies. When you go tell people the economy is great and people can't make ends meet because they go to the grocery store and the cart is $250 and they're trying to figure out what they have to put back on the shelves, that's a problem. And they know better, and they know it's a lie that they're getting. Whereas if you say it is really, really hard now, and it's going to take us a while to dig our way out of it, but we're going to, and here are the things, you can get into the details of here's the things we're going to do, but you have to have your eye on some end game that people can follow, and Powell just doesn't get that. He has no idea.
I think he sort of, unfortunately, Kevin, I think he sort of does, which is worse, but we're going to break here in a second, but everybody kind of ponder this a little bit. I mean, Kevin and I both are the product of, shall we say, strong moral families and Catholic schools and nuns and all the other stuff. So, we learned early on, what is it, the seventh commandment, thou shalt not lie? Is it seven? I'm not sure. I think it's seven.
We didn't memorize.
No, no, I think it was seven.
We'd get the crap kicked out of us if we did it.
But most people think of a lie as a positive thing,
as an overt activity.
Yes, thank you. That the wall is blue, and I'm going to tell somebody it's red. That's a positive, overt lie. Okay, but I think as I've aged, the much more powerful lie is telling half the story. And I don't know if I can. Nobody wanted me to go teach that in second grade, but the person who probably did the best at that ever in our lifetime, that I've ever heard, was Sammy Sosa in front of Congress when he said, "What'd they say? Have you taken any steroids, Mr. Sosa?" And he said something to the effect of, "I've never broken the laws of the U.S. or the Dominican Republic, and I've never injected myself with steroids." To this day, everybody's convinced that Sammy Sosa said he didn't take steroids. He didn't say that at all, did he? But he said he took pills, and he didn't take them in the U.S., or he didn't buy them in the U.S. or Dominican Republic, right?
Yeah, and if there was any injection, he got somebody to do it for him.
Yeah, or maybe he's just afraid of needles and took pills. Duh. Anyway, SP Futures down 450.
All right, I'll be back on in a minute.
Okay, Nasdaq Futures down 46. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Low and open, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamar, Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 4, NASDAQ futures down 51. Nothing going crazy. We got Caterpillar's had two huge days, down 240, but still, it's way the hell up from what it was. Interesting, very interesting. And this, you know, I don't follow this, even what the stock's supposed to do or whatever. This Donald J. Trump, I think it traded 45 yesterday morning. It's trading 26. I don't know what that's about. I'm just lobbing that one out there. I'm sure people may be a little interested, but I don't know what they do. I have no comment on it other than the fact that I would have thought the thing would at least be even, not down, but there it is. It just goes to show you. Europe down 109 on DAX. That's 0.6%. FTSE down 60.7. CAC around down 43.6. By the way, lost in even all this news is the Fed did cut by a quarter point yesterday. European markets lower as mining stocks fall 3%. There you go. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 118.3%. Hang Seng down 225. This seems like a yo-yo every day. Down 1%. Shanghai down 18.5%, but they were way up yesterday. So, U.S., again, Dow was actually down 59 cents, but the S&P was up 44, NASDAQ up 285. So it was a pretty strong day. Dow, you know, you can't really look at that one. Unless you have a stock in there. 10-year Treasury down 4 basis points. We're down to 4.3, so we've stopped going up here the last couple days. I don't know if that's a pause or that's something that's going to keep going. The Bund down 5 basis points to 2.39. Oil down $1.06, 71.30 right there in the middle of this range. Brent down 91 cents, 74.72. Natural gas up a penny, 2.70. RBOB down a penny, 2.03. Gold, which has been coming down, is coming down again today. Down 11.80, 26.94. It was up to 2750. We'll see if this will sell off, if it's a buying opportunity, or whether the bloom is off here. Silver down 36 cents, 31.49. Foreign exchange, this has been the big mover here. But today, not much. The euro is at 107.7, kind of the same as yesterday. British pound, 129.6. So no real movement there. Crypto down 436, but way up there still, 76,202. I don't know what. Everybody thinks Trump's going to be really good for his Bitcoin. We'll see. It has been so far. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Bulls suck.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:38 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 43 degrees right now with a high of 60. Mostly sunny. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 45 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona. 46 degrees right now with a high of 69. Plenty of sunshine, but cool. And tonight will be clear and will remain cool with a low of 45 degrees on the traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 19 minutes. We're looking at 36 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 27 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. And Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, another 29 minutes. Let's go to sports. NFL Week 10. Yesterday, the Ravens beat the Bengals 35-34. And this Sunday, we have Patriots at Bears, 12 p.m. Is anybody going to watch that? And we got the Jets at the Cardinals, 3:25 p.m. We have the NBA. Yesterday, Bulls lose to the Timberwolves, 119-135. But today, we got the Suns playing the Mavericks at 6:30 p.m. Lastly, in NHL, the Blackhawks lose to Stars, 1-3. Back over to you, Chief.
Ricky, the Bears, there's people that live and die by these Bears.
Really? Have I offended a couple of people here just now? Maybe so.
My guys that I had an adult beverage with last night.
Yes.
A couple of these, I won't say idiots, I'm going to say they're blind because they're fans.
Yes.
Still think the Bears are going to be 9-8.
I saw the game last Sunday, and I was I was kind of trying to convince a friend of mine to try out American football. You know, with me, you know, I was trying to you know, I think it's fun, but then like after a couple of minutes, I told her to stop watching, you know, because it was a little too hard, you know.
because they sucked. What you needed was to get your friend to watch last night's game, where it was 35-34, and Bengals tied in the last minute, scored a touchdown in the last minute, and went for the 2-point conversion and failed, but they were going for the win. So it was that game went to the wire, and it was very entertaining. On the other hand, if you want to turn them on to American football and you're going to use the Bears to do it, that's a losing proposition.
I wonder, Ricky, here's a question. Yes, I know that soccer is more of your game, but I wonder if even guys your age, because you're still pretty young, if you were introduced to not to tackle with equipment and stuff, if your guys got out there and Kevin and I were to teach you, say you had a 5 or 6 man touch game, how much, maybe a 5,000 rush or not a lot of blocking, how much you would enjoy it? It's a lot of exercise, and it's a lot of fun. I've actually
played American football before. You know, there were a couple of people back where I'm from where they would like to play it and stuff. But and it was very fun, you know. But I guess we played it a little different, you know. I see a lot of, there's a lot of rules when it comes to the NFL. And there's a lot of, you go and you do a play and then you stop. And then you have some time to regroup and stuff like that. Yeah, that wasn't like how we did it pretty much. You know, we kind of just grabbed the ball off each other and tackled each other.
I played touch.
In other words, you played a game, a playground game called Smear-Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say how many times we played touch in the fall on the dorm on the quad grass virtually every night, and I played it at home. Yeah, but we had a dead end street. We played in the street every night. Touch football is a great game. You play with five people. You can play with six people. It's hard to play soccer with six people, but you can play touch football with six.
Well, you'd actually be surprised. I mean, back in the day, we would just play with whoever we had, and for example, let's say we had three people. It's just the best one would go alone, and then it would just be the rest of us, you know, the two of us. So it's honestly, I think that the way you talk about football is the way. I mean, it kind of relates to the way I feel about soccer. You know, it's like when we wanted to play a sport, we just played soccer. You know, it was just the
well, it's like 16-inch softball, one bat, one ball, 20 people play.
Right. Yeah.
So but, I mean, you don't see anybody playing unless you're some sort of lunatic. Actually, I did know a guy I played softball with. He played football until he was probably 35, like on a tackle with equipment team. But most people just play touch. I mean, it's a whole different game.
Yeah.
I have a question, Kevin. Just on general principles. Now you gotta know who the X's are and who the O's. What would go through your mind to either tie the game up and go to overtime or try for the 2-point? What's the percentages on? What's the you got to know who your X's and O's are. The overall percentages on 2-point conversion, is it 50%? I'm not even sure. I bet it's about half.
Yeah, I don't know what the stat is. I think the decision process, there's a certain amount of am I at home or am I on the road type of thinking. I think it partly depends on your opponent. But so when you're facing a red hot quarterback who just had three touchdowns and like 200 yards in the fourth quarter, do you really want to play against Lamar Jackson in overtime? Same thing with Mahomes. You know, Mahomes seems to just it's almost like he's guaranteed to win if he gets to overtime. So I think that comes into play. If I were a coach, I would have a whole separate playbook of 2-point conversion plays. Not anything that's outrageous, but something that the other team hasn't seen. And I would just cycle through them. So I'd take two of them and I'd say, we're going to practice the heck out of these two, you know, on a right with not practice the heck out of them, because you got to spend practice time on your game plan too. But we're always going to have two ready, and as soon as we use one, it goes, it's out of the book, and we start working on a new. You know, we replace it with another one, because I don't want to just drop back and show them a play that I run all the time. You know, if I want to increase my odds, my team's got to be ready to execute it, but the other team, you know, ideally it's something the other team hasn't seen yet. And so in my world, that's how I would work it out. I have no idea what coaches do, but that would increase my odds. And if I felt a lot of confidence in bringing out a play that that we can execute and the other team hasn't seen before, then I'd go for two to win it every time.
Well, I think it goes back to, again, who are the X's and who are the O's? If you got for those that have never coached or played football, it's real difficult to move down by the goal line because the defense is all within 10 yards of you. So it's way different than in the middle of the field in terms of being able to move forward because the defense is right there. I mean, you can't play 20 yards deep or you'd be in the stands, right? So but the question is, how good is your offensive line to where they have to bring people up to almost beyond the line, in which case you can open up the back of the end zone? If your offensive line's horrible, they're going to play you straight. And I don't know how you find somebody open in the end zone with all those people back there. If you're, yeah. You know, it's. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, why does Philadelphia not having as much luck on the run this year? Well, guess what? A 10-year All-Pro center retired, right? Duh. It's not everything, but it's a lot.
Right? Yeah. You can do stats all you want, but if my center can't block your nose guard, it's not going to help.
Yeah, it's not going to help. It doesn't really matter. It has to do with who you have on that particular day. But it is sort of interesting. I mean, I just would love to hear have somebody explain to me their thought process. I mean, I don't know what you said, whether it's at home or on the road. You're disagreeing with John Madden, who says venue never won a football game. You know, so. I don't know how much I would let that change my point of view, unless I had to catch a plane. I don't know, but so much is on the coin flip that if you actually go down and score a touchdown, the other guys don't get the ball. So that's a problem.
Well, no, you get a chance to match it now.
Since when? A
couple of years.
I saw a game last week. If
somebody scores on the first possession, you have the opportunity to match it. There might be something about if you get a touchdown on the first possession versus if you kick a field goal on the first possession.
If you kick a field goal, you definitely get the ball. If you score a touchdown, you win.
Why it depends on the coin flip. You don't want to do that with Mahomes.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Because you can coin flip and say, you know, I have 50% chance of winning, and then what's the probability of the other team scoring? And if the probability is too high of the other team scoring, then you don't want to rely on the coin flip. I don't know. You know, you can work out the math on it, but it still gets down to, do I have the right play and the people who can execute it?
What was the, game last Sunday?
To me, that's the bigger part of it.
Was the game last Sunday? Was it Detroit or somebody? It was overtime, and they just got the ball and went all the way down and scored. Maybe it was might have been the Rams. It was the Rams.
Yeah, well, if I were still at home, I would look it up but I'm driving now.
You know what? It was the Rams. The Rams did it. Because I remember the coach running out in the field and hugging the quarterback and stuff. The Rams did it. They just walked up, went all the way down the field and scored a touchdown.
Right.
And Kevin, we have again the. I just hope somehow people kind of come together here somehow. I mean, I sound like I'm a preacher, for God's sake, which I'm not. But somewhere along the line here, we have to get people to the idea that, like I said earlier, in times of economic stress, there was a book. I think it was a victim of my. Little flood in my parents' basement. Some guy wrote a book. It's something about welfare is generally for the rich, or welfare is really for the rich, or something like that, or not always for the poor. But it went through chapter after chapter. But you know, some people's definition of welfare basically revolves around themselves, right? I mean, if somebody else is always getting something, I'm not. So if you were to talk about welfare, most people would say. It's something you're giving food stamps or something to somebody who's not working. That's what their idea of welfare would be. But nobody, but this guy took everything from the top. He says the biggest welfare is Social Security. because everybody pays the same amount in, and yet the wealthier people live a lot longer, generally. And also Medicare. I mean, you're not going to find a whole lot of people from the hood getting open heart surgery at age 80 or getting two new knees at age 75. They don't last that long. And by the way, they would never have any idea where to go to even get the surgery. So if you walk all the way down the top, I mean, who benefits by government largesse? It can be pretty scary. And you know how much this person deserves. Last night, an adult bear, one of these guys is an attorney. I don't know if he's the brightest bulb, but a friend of mine. And he's talking about how these judges make too much. And I said, well, because it's one of the reasons why we're in hack, is governments. I said, how much does the judge make? I don't know, like 150. I said, okay, well, how does a guy who's been an attorney for 30 years, what do they make? I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I said, okay, well, how much should they make? And he said, well, they should make like 80 or something. I said, well, I don't know if you ever went, do you ever go to the, not that I ever went to a saloon, Kevin, you ever go to that saloon in South Bend? I don't think you ever came with us. We found a place on Friday night that had fish fries during Lent. They had a nice pool table. I went there maybe 5-6 times, but on the wall was a poster, and it said, remember, everybody in this world except you is overpaid. How true is that in most people's mind?
Yeah, what was the place?
I forgot the name of it. Somewhere we only went during Lent, and they made great fish on Friday night at a great pool table. I remember some guy, some kind of heavyweight, strong-looking dude. He did a break, and I never saw this in all the years I played pool. On a break, he hit it so hard, the cue ball, which happens, and two object balls left the table. How's that for a whack?
Well, I can remember seeing that when it didn't happen, but that was kind of chemically induced.
Yeah, well. But, I mean, it's the truth.
I remember looking, you know, watching the flight of a ball that didn't leave the table and having our buddy Tom DeVore saying, what did you see?
What was the Ray Milland movie where he was drunk? He had a hangover and he kept seeing mice run across the floor that weren't there. What the hell was the name of that movie? It was a classic one about a guy with alcohol problems. And he would see mice running across the floor. Speaking of which, they say if a black cat crosses your path, it's supposed to be bad luck, right? We got this big black cat in the neighborhood that's walking all over the place in the morning. But what happens if a rat runs across your path? Is that good or bad?
Just don't step in the droppings.
I was in the truck and he ran in front of me, the rat.
Oh, okay. Was he up for election?
He might have been a judge.
Yeah, might have been on that judicial ballot, huh?
You know, I want to ask you about that, so we've had a chance to think about it. When stuff happens, and then people decide that doesn't make any sense, and turn it another way, and then the other way turns out to be just the same as the first way, what I'm talking about is, if you're in Cook County, and I don't know how the rest of the country is, I mean, it's probably half and half, I think back in the day, we used to have appointed judges, right, Kevin? I think we did. And now the question is, oh, okay, who the hell gets to appoint them? Are they just a bunch of political hacks? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, so now, and then everybody says, wait a minute, we don't want that. We don't want, you know, pick a name. We don't want Ricardo Garcia picking 100 judges every year, and who the hell is this Ricardo Garcia guy? Then we say, all right, we're going to elect them. But now that presupposes that people are going to spend the time to get to know 40 judges up for election. Well, that's not going to happen. So now we're back in this other routine where for the Ricardo Garcia vacancy, because he's retiring or croaked, vote for, and then there's Kevin O'Neill's there unopposed. And you see 30 of these things, where there's always a name there, it's always unopposed. So obviously there's some kind of process that somebody has to get these people on the ballot and nobody else, which to me is pretty damn similar than just appointing somebody, isn't it?
It is, and part of that is because you really don't have a Republican Party in Cook County at all, and in the city of Chicago, so there is no slate of opposition. But I don't know that, you know, people aren't really going to pay much attention to the judges anyway, are they?
The
only time anybody would pay attention to a judge is if there is an outrageous ruling. Or I've seen it in situations where there's a judge that has let enough people out who have come back to commit violent crimes that they say this one's got to go. But that's rare that I see it. And again, you know, when there's no opposition, even if it's a nonpartisan election, there will be some backing behind the judicial candidates, and it's going to come from the parties.
Well, I don't think the person, you know, you got me. I don't remember, even though I did know how many of these things were on the ballot. I don't think the person that was there was named, was labeled Democrat or Republican. It was just a name.
No, I said even if it's a nonpartisan election, the support's going to come from somewhere.
Yeah, cause that's because counting.
Because nonpartisan elections are partisan elections. Well, in the end, they are. You know, as an example, Wisconsin had a big deal Supreme Court justice election last year or the year, but you know, while it was theoretically a nonpartisan election, it was totally a conservative versus liberal race and totally supported by the parties.
Well, how come in Illinois, I don't know how, because you're in two other states over there, you don't live in two states, but you're very aware of Indiana.
I kind of do.
Well, okay, but I'm saying, somehow or other, our municipal elections here are allegedly nonpartisan, yet all the other stuff, county and state, is clearly partisan. I mean, in Evergreen Park, where I grew up, which is like a little carve out of Chicago, we lived across the street from Chicago, so it's just like being in Chicago. You couldn't even run the name of the party could not run consecutively. So one year you were the good government party, next year you were the better government party, the third year you were like the best, and then you could start all over again or something. But so you couldn't even do that. Now, in the city here, the aldermanic elections are not Democrat-Republican, no, neither is the mayor. Everybody just runs and they have the runoff, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because you don't have any other party but Democrat anyway in Chicago.
Well, I mean,
they sort of exist as an organization, but they really don't, and they're pretty factless.
Well, but you have, I don't know who's going to get the House. It looks to me like the Republicans are, but Kevin, in the last 20 years, we've seen this, three times? And I'm not so sure that the divides between the parties, inside the parties, are almost as bad as the divides between the other party, right? I mean, Bush couldn't get stuff done because of and even the last guy, the very, very conservative part of the House kind of messed with the Speaker, whatever his name was, Johnson or something, and
yeah,
booted him out.
Yeah, well, they were messing with Kevin McCarthy. But,
yeah,
Johnson's the Speaker now. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out now, because any dysfunction there would derail their presidential candidate.
Well, that's right. And, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Bush.
Carl might know this, so Carl, feel free to chime in. Did Gates get reelected again?
Gates.
Matt Gates? He was one of the guys that was pushing, you know, that was causing all the dysfunction in the Republican caucus.
But there's always something. The Tea Party was a revolution within the Republican Party, right? They fought more than...
Yeah, but that was a reaction to Obama's first couple of years and all the bailouts that they were doing. Obama for 2 years had a veto-proof majority in the Senate, and he had the House and didn't get anything done. They didn't do anything with immigration, despite his promise that would be right at the top of the agenda.
Right.
And they didn't get health care done. They wound up having to do that using reconciliation to force it through.
Yeah.
After the 2010, what Obama called a shellacking, they wound up having to use reconciliation to pass the Affordable Care
Act. That's what I'm saying. Whenever I've seen the Democrats or the Republicans have this sweep, the internal party fighting stops them from having, so far, they don't ever seem to be able to do anything like there should be a sweep.
Well, the Democrats have been very disciplined. They did have their, 4 years ago, had their little uprising with the squad, with the AOC and her pals. But even those, for the most part, got slapped back into line. You know, Pelosi is just... was amazing at running her caucus. and keeping everybody in line. And she could do it. I think her daughter once said something like, you know, she'll reach into your chest and rip your heart out, and you won't even know it happened.
That's a good thing to say about Ma.
Yeah, Ma. and then you send her your Mother's Day card.
So what? We have one of our 30 seconds of sports here. One of our, I won't say bozo buddies, is actually going to go to that game tomorrow night in November. Of course, the weather's not so bad, actually. So what possesses
her? Yeah, it's going to be chilly, and it might be rainy.
I mean, what is this? We have two night games left in South Bend in November?
They might, yeah. Who else do they have to play? I don't know if there's a night game. The night game might be USC out there.
Well, is Army at night or Army during the day?
Oh, yeah, you know what? That probably is, but that's not in South Bend. That's in Yankee Stadium.
Oh, okay. All right. So this is the last game in South Bend.
Well, I don't think it's the last one of the year, but it's a little early for that.
Well, I think, anyway, there is. But the idea that you're just a studio audience is really something, isn't it? I mean, they've given me the message, don't go.
Well, I'm looking at, at this playoff scenario where the first round is at one of the on-campus sites. You know, the four highest rated first-round teams get to host the first-round game, and then it starts going to neutral sites. And
The four highest without the bye.
Yeah. And everybody else goes into the quarterfinals.
Right.
Or whatever round it is. Whatever round it is that I'm going to see in the Fiesta Bowl.
Well, the Notre Dame, if the world ended today, the Irish would be playing Penn State in Penn State, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they would. But, you know, there's going to be some more teams that take some losses. And if they go ahead and start beating up on, you know, they've been beating up pretty good on the weak competition, making themselves look better. So let's just assume they get into one of those four, five, six, seven slots. And just for argument. And now you're going to have a home game in South Bend on what, the 20th or the 21st of December? Well, I don't see how that's going to sell out.
Well, how are you going to sell out Penn State with 100,000 seats with the students not there? I mean, at least Chicago is close to South Bend. What's in State College? Nothing. Except,
well, and that's going to depend a lot on the start time, and I don't know what the start times are for that that Saturday. But if you have a noon game or a 1 o'clock game, then maybe you'll get a lot of people to make the day trip there, and there'll be a certain amount of novelty to it that will attract people, and you'll get some local audience. Your neighbors from, you know, Rapid, Chicago, Indianapolis, maybe even Milwaukee, you know, Cleveland, certainly Toledo, those kinds of places. You'll get the day tripper Notre Dame alumni to go. But, there's potential for crappy. They've kind of gotten away from that day trip by the way they schedule games at 3:30 in the afternoon Eastern or at night. And so now they rely on people making the weekend trip, you know, the people making their annual pilgrimage back to campus and so on. And they sell their tickets that way. And I don't think you're going to get, A, around the holiday time, you're going to have a hard time getting people to make the pilgrimage. And B, it's just going to be a fairly short notice thing instead of the plan that people make in June. Well, I think they're going to have a hard time selling out, and that's a Notre Dame example. I don't know what Penn State's going to look like with 100,000 seats or some of the others that that could be in play here.
Well, if everybody from the university is gone, I think they got a problem in State College, but that's just me. Kevin, thank you. We're going to have Carlo in a second. SP Futures Downs, where are you off to anyway? You just heading to a...
I got a meeting in a half an hour, so I'm pulling into campus right now.
Now, make sure you do what you're supposed to do at every meeting. Schedule another meeting.
Actually, I'm interviewing a candidate for a full-time IT opening that I have. Carl, it's not too late to throw your hat in the ring.
That's before you're down. You know, Carl, you'll get a parking place.
Oh, yeah, great.
And, you get to put professor on your resume.
Yeah, you get to put professor on your resume, but you do not get a parking space.
So, Larry, don't even get that.
So I just happened to pull into a good one because I'm here early.
Kevin, have a good weekend, buddy. I'm sure we'll hear from you during the game tomorrow night.
All right.
So, Carl, what's up, bud, other than everything?
Oh, well, well, can I have a victory lap for the call on what was going to happen Tuesday?
You did better than me.
We had a little watch party Zoom thing for people on my forum. Best one attended that we've ever had, by the way. There had to be 40 people on there at one point. And
you had them at your house, or were you talking about online?
Online, Zoom.
What the hell kind of party is that? Who serves the booze?
We're all sitting around getting drunk watching the returns.
You don't get to clink a glass with somebody? Or
well, I drank a lot of single malt scotch.
Are you one of these guys where you're not drinking alone if your dog is home?
Well, something like that, except it's cat. But the interesting thing was, you know, and when it became pretty obvious which way Georgia, North Carolina, and a couple of the others were going, I forgot. About 11 o'clock, I said, "This is over. This is the way it's going." And I mean, it's another couple hours before it was actually called. But the interesting, so you know, of course, the long knives are out for everybody on the, you know, the Democrat side as to, you know, what went wrong and all this and everything. The reality is as I have pointed out like forever, everyone votes their wallet. And then you saw the insanity yesterday of Powell. I was, you know, I was listening to his press conference.
I feel that way every time. What was so different about yesterday?
Well, okay, so a couple things that were interesting was, you know, the consensus was it was going to be 25, right? And again, if you look at the IRX had been basically there for, you know, 3 weeks in front of it. And the market says this, and the Fed, oh no, we're going to do this because we want to do the people. We will never make progress in terms of the forward view of what really goes on and who really runs what until we start pounding the table daily about the fact that the Fed, when it comes to these announcements, now there are things they do behind the scenes that have a lot of influence. Okay, I mean their mouth is probably their largest influence, right? But in terms of actually setting rates, excuse me, when you go to buy a house, the Fed did not set your mortgage rate. The Fed did not set the 13-week T-bill rate. The market did that. And the Fed follows it because if it pushes on a string, it continues to lose money doing it. And therefore, you know, at some point, I mean, you know, this is the difference between being a trader and pretty much anybody else, Chief, and you know this because you are one. If you continue to insist that you're right when the market says you're wrong, you will eventually run out of money.
I used to think that.
Well, I mean, you know, there's always this idea that, they can, you know, there's no limit to the, you know, to what they can do. There is, and one of the things that I find
the limit before the limit's reached, you're run over by a bulldozer.
well, exactly. The problem is that you didn't find the limit. However, you're a pancake.
Yeah.
Okay. So does it really matter? Not to you.
Right. I mean, right? But as a trader, I mean, the reason why I'm pushing back on this because 5 years ago, you would have never seen me at all disagree a bit with what you just said. But the last 5 years, reflect a little bit, Mr. Carl. These guys, not just here, but in Europe, when you started to see the inflation going up because they were pouring money into the system, which they were, tremendous amounts, and you looked at a 10-year bond and you said, wow, 1.5%. Oops. This is the greatest trade in my lifetime.
Oh, look.
Yeah.
Chief, this was not, you know, this was not the first time. Go talk to all the people that got carried out on their shields that were shorting JGBs.
No, I mean, this, after living through the part in the 70s and 80s and being pretty up on it because I was in grad school at the time, this is something nobody ever even would have believed could have happened, Carl. This is so far off the page.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, though, is that the problem with what we've done over those years is that as I pointed out in a column I wrote last week, if you look at the bond market, you look at the 10-year treasury rate, okay, just by itself, although you can look at the other maturities and they've got the same sort of slope to them. Back after the 08 crash, it was evident in the charts that the long cycle, which has historically, through the entire United States history, 30-year cycles, thereabouts, generally higher rates, generally lower rates. And there are periods of time in there in a generally declining environment when they go up, just like there are periods of time in a generally rising environment when they go down. But if you pull the lens back and you take the wider view, it's a long-term trend. And those long-term trends are cyclical. We tampered with this and by the way, we know what happens when you tamper with it too, because we did it in the 1950s with repression. And to a large degree, that crap is what brought us the mess in the 1970s and early 80s.
Yeah.
Chief, you can argue against that if you want, but the fact of the matter is that the administration of the Federal Reserve attempted to prevent that cycle from ever happening.
I agree with that, but I'm going to say...
And it was not effective, okay? It delayed the damage, but it did not change the outcome. And the problem is we did the same thing after the 08 crash... Okay, and by the way, it went on for about the same amount of time.
All right, what I'm trying to get at here, by the way, I'm not disagreeing with anything, but the discussion kind of started, and just focus on this for a bit, the part that is, to me, is so different than anything I've seen or read, was normally, if you look at, you know, what rate should be, your rate going forward is going to be some sort of a toll for using somebody else's money, which is the real interest rate, plus some sort of a view on any kind of inflation. When I get paid back, it's going to be worth less than when I lent it to Joe. And over time, you would say, okay, well, if I'm going to lend Carl $50 for 2 weeks, I'm probably not going to worry about whether $50 is worth the same amount 2 weeks from now. But going forward, that becomes a little bit more of an issue.
Oh, over 10 years, it's a big deal.
Well, in general, you're going to see your rates kind of creep up going further just because of uncertainty. All right. But that's not where I want to go with this. And let's keep it narrow, because I really want your we both can wander out in terms of history. But the thing I've never seen before, and even worse in Europe this time, was we're pouring money in this system. Everybody knows that the inflation is coming up, so I need to get more for my money out 3 or 4 years than maybe I did last year. Okay, so because the dollar is not going to be worth as much, or the euro, or the yen, 3 years from now, because we're pouring them in like it's, you know, it's gravy on the potatoes. So when rates get to say zero in France or someplace, now when you buy a bond, okay, there's going to be a coupon on the bond. Kick me if I'm being too technical here. There's going to be a coupon on the bond. Let's say it's 3%. Okay, so now what's going to happen over 10 years? You're going to get a check for 3%, every year, probably every half a year. And by the way, you're going to get your $1,000 back. Right, Carl? Pretty simple.
Right. So, right. That's the way it's supposed to work.
So
right.
If all of a sudden you buy this 10-year bond and it's 3%, and that's the coupon, and you buy it right at 100 when it comes out, well, they never really come out at 100, but that's another story. Say it's 3%. Now, all of a sudden, interest rates race to 7. All right, now you're sitting there going, you still got your bond, but now if market rates are 7, your bond is not worth the $1,000 anymore. It's probably worth $9,100 or something along those lines. I'm probably pretty close on that, actually, maybe $9,000. And which is okay, because now if you buy it there, you're going to get the market rate. But now you that bought the thing at $1,000, you're down $10 in your account at PTI. Right. If you want to sell it today. Now, if you keep it for 10
right,
years.
Right. If you want to sell it today, yeah, right. Yeah, the mark to market is down right. by the change in rate. Right.
And so normally this is just a trade and you sit there and go, wait a minute. These rates are like 1%. And it looks to me like inflation's coming back. I should sell this bond, right? Because this thing's going down because the market rate's going to go to whatever.
Correct.
Well, okay. But now, who's buying it from me?
No, but well, just, well,
if, it's just Carl, if it's just Carl or Ricky, you know, I'm not saying, I'm sure Carl has more money than me, but I mean, okay, but it's not the Fed that was willing to put like $4 trillion at this. Because guess what? Chief is not going to be able to hang in there against a bulldozer that weighs 4 trillion pounds. And right. Can you imagine, Carl, we don't even talk about this, but can you imagine in Europe, if you got to the point where, now when these rates go down, you're actually going to be in the, going back to my original bond example, you got a $1,000 bond, the coupon says it's going to trade 3%. Well, now the bond price is up to, say, 120, to where if you buy right. the damn thing, you're going to, even with all the interest rates, all the interest checks you're going to get and the $1,000 at the end, you're even. Okay, now you sit there and go, what manner of moron would do that? What?
Well, obviously, some manners a moron did, right?
Well, right. So I'm sitting there, going, okay. If anybody, if their dad gave me money, or mom, or whatever, or grandpa, or grandma, gave me a bunch of money to manage, and I'm charging a fee, which you know, which we charge very minimal, by the way. But if I'm charging a fee, and I put
nobody works for free, Chief.
Right, right. But if I put you in a bond where you're not going to make any money for 10 years. Somebody's going to say, what the hell kind of manager is this guy? where'd you find this bump? Now, get a load of this. The fact is, in Europe, I lost money on that transaction because those guys bought it even higher to where the rate was negative.
Right.
How can you sell a bond at even Chief. And lose on it? I mean,
okay, but understand something. When that happens, okay, and obviously it has, right? When that happens, what is economically, what is that the exact same thing as?
I don't know, but it's a loss to me.
You do know. You just don't want to say the word.
Thievery, something.
Inflation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Okay. So here's one of the other chestnuts that flies around that is complete BS. It's a lie. And that is tariffs are exactly monetarily neutral every single time.
In the big picture, but not to the person.
Now, wait a minute. Not maybe on you.
Yeah, not maybe on you is right.
Well, but monetarily, all right, so I have, let's say that I'm Apple, and I have iPhones that are made in China out of Chinese components. And Donald Trump comes in here and he plays steamroller and he puts 100% tariff on iPhones, okay, on anything comes in from China, which happens to include iPhones. All right, so when that iPhone hits the dock in San Diego or whatever port it comes into, Long Beach, that $1,000 iPhone is now $2,000.
Okay, now wait a minute.
Hold on a minute. Let me finish. So now, in order for that product to come into the United States, there's $1,000 that has to be paid by somebody, right? Okay, so you say, well, that made the price of the phone go up by $1,000. That's inflationary. Okay, that is a true statement. However, you left the other half off, which by the way, is the same thing that everybody likes to do with this stuff with Friedman and other monetary theories, is they always leave the part out they don't like. The part out that they leave out is that where's the $1,000 go? Well, it goes into the treasury. And by the way, the reason you have inflation is because there's deficit spending going on in the United States. And the $1,000 that gets added onto the price of product is exactly balanced by a $1,000 smaller deficit. And it is exactly the same amount of money to the penny. Now, does this mean that you don't get stuck if you want to buy the phone, with a higher bill. Well, of course, yes, you do. However, let me ask you a question, Chief. Over the last 10, 15 years, especially the last three or four, there's been an awful lot of inflation in the price of stocks and houses, right?
No.
Oh, wait a minute.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant investing.
Oh, yes. It's brilliant investing.
Yes.
So when you happen to own the asset that goes up in price, you love this. It's fabulous. Yes. You're brilliant.
Yep. Well, brilliant. Okay? Absolutely brilliant.
When you happen to be the one who has to pay for the asset at the higher price, you got stuck in the butt.
Yeah, but nobody cares about those people.
Oh. But monetarily, looking at the economy as a whole.
Okay, do me a favor.
Tariff is exactly balanced.
Okay, broaden what you just said. All right. What you said is correct, but you're doing it so narrow, you're sort of making policy out of it. A tariff is nothing other than a tax, right?
Well, of course.
Okay, so you can make the same argument, in fact, it is the exact same argument, that if you walked in and said, you know what I'm going to do, which would not be popular, okay, I'm going to put a 20% surcharge on everybody's income tax this year.
Right.
It's the exact same argument.
Well, no, it's not.
Sure it is, because I'm going to take...
No. Hold on a minute, Chief. No, it's not. And here's the reason why. Okay, if you ignore what the tariff is an attempt to do, you're correct in that looking at it simply on a balance sheet perspective, you're right. And by the way, that in the instant sense, in other words, right now, okay,
yeah,
is absolutely the case. But look at the at what you're trying to accomplish and what you want to see. So. And by the way, I'm going to use an example. When Obamacare came in, it took the effective tax rate for an entrepreneur or a small business person on the second $20,000 you made from the normal income plus FICA, which in that case would be about 35%. Okay, because FICA is that 15 off the top,
yeah,
that you can't do anything
it's
about, right?
FICA and unemployment, and what's the other one?
Well, I'm saying, but yeah. Well, unemployment for a single employee doesn't apply.
It adds up to 15%, whatever it is.
Ends up being about 15%, 15.2 if you want to be technical, but close enough. Okay, so 15, and then you know that second 20 probably has you in the 20% bracket, right? You know, the 18 or 20%, yeah, and the marginal. And of course, you know, some of this has to do with, okay, where is it really because of the standard deduction and things like, but we'll just call it around 30%.
But it gets complicated enough that it's hard to, I mean, what is
it is.
What is the $2,000 cell phone? Now you got to pay twice as much sales tax on it.
Well, but hold on a second, Chief. This is why I think this is an important policy decision, and one that people get bamboozled by the politicians of this all the time, and we need to stop this.
No kidding.
All right. So here's what happened, though, is that when Obamacare came in, because the subsidy on this, and at the time it was required, you either had to buy the insurance or you had to pay a fine. And if you declined to play their game and you said, well, fine, it's $2,000 fine, I'm just going to pay the fine, then you were exposed to charge master pricing, which, by the way, is an illegal act under 15 United States Chapter 1. Has been for 100 years.
That's probably the single biggest flaw in Obama.
No, hold on a minute. Hold on. Let me finish.
Yes.
All right. So if you took this and you said, all right, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to buy the mandate because I was mandated to do it, I'm going to go along with it. Your effective tax rate, because of the loss of the subsidy, as soon as you cross that $40,000 income threshold, your effective tax rate on that second $20,000 was 90%.
Yeah,
guess what? Well, guess what my answer to that is, Chief.
All right, the theory of the Obamacare, which had some basis in intelligence.
No, it didn't.
Didn't make it through the process, the details.
Oh no, the details were exactly as it was designed originally.
No, I'm talking about way back. I'm talking about if everybody had some sort of insurance, you wouldn't have the people who have insurance subsidizing the people who don't.
Chief, you are, you know, you live in this area. You live in a fantasy land.
What I said was that was the theory of it. I never said it
No, it wasn't the theory of it. Because
yes, it was.
No, it wasn't. And as a guy who wrote the checks in the 1990s for my staff.
Well, we did the same thing at PTI, so you're not alone there.
Oh, so you know then that everybody in your staff is individually rated, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Guess what? ERISA says that
we had a combination of girls and childbearing A's and old guys. How did we work out?
Absolutely. And here's the problem with that. And ERISA says that if you want to take that deduction above the line, you cannot discriminate and you cannot withhold more than 50% of the cheapest person out of their check.
All right. You're in the detail. Okay.
No, I'm telling you how the system actually works. I don't care what people sell you as a politician. I'm telling you what the truth was, is that the younger, healthier person prior to Obamacare was paying half of the fat childbearing woman's premium.
Right.
And guess what? You weren't allowed to tell him that, nor were you allowed to make him whole. Because if you did that, you lost the deductibility.
I'm saying there are a lot of economic theories that sound good, but in the detail, by the way,
Well, by the way, Obamacare just made that worse. It didn't change. It wasn't intended to change anything.
The original idea of why this all got started in the first place, maybe Obama never even knew what the original idea was. The original idea was, and I've said it a bunch of times, I don't want to go through it again, is how the mess that was the healthcare system before Obamacare. And this is what the only thing I'll say about Obamacare is, and this is, you know, this is a big time slap at Republicans. It really is, because when Hillary tried to do something, because somebody realized the system was breaking down, which it was, she tried to do something, and the Republicans, what do they say, used to say in the training pit, the snipes are grousing. All they did was bitch about it. It was wrong. It was this. It was that. No alternative plan whatsoever that I knew of. There might have been one.
You know what? That's because the Republicans love the money from the lobbyists as well as the Democrats.
Right. So all of a sudden now we get George Bush in there. Now, he had 9/11. It was somewhat of an excuse. Some was a real excuse. He ignored it for 8 years. So now we knew we had a problem. Now we had totally tried to do something. That gets slapped back in our face. So really nothing happened in the Clinton administration for 8 years. Bush ignored it for 8 years. Now we're back to a problem 16 years ago that somebody tries to address. And he addresses it in a way where he doesn't deal with costs. And you and I both know that was the Achilles heel of the whole mess.
The Achilles heel of it is that it's been an illegal practice that got embedded.
The theory was, in my opinion, to me it's very similar to pollution credits. Sounds good in the classroom, but boy, try and make it work.
You can't.
So the idea with the Obamacare was, or what I thought it was, is back in the day when you walked in the hospital and you had I'll use the term high-end insurance, you paid for a whole bunch of stuff. The 20% of the people in the hospital that had the high-end insurance paid for 80% of the stuff in the hospital.
Right, and by the way, that was a scam.
But it was also falling apart because more and more.
Well,
insurance
no
company,
kidding.
Yeah, well, but I mean, Medicaid was paying $100 per person. I'm talking 30 years ago, which wasn't getting any. Medicare is not paying that much. They're covering quote costs. And then there's people with the insurance that have the. Anyway, the idea was, if everybody had some sort of insurance policy, and everybody participated, the people at the top wouldn't get screwed. So actually, their rates should have gone down. Now, the fly in the ointment there is, what if somebody says, I don't want no stinking insurance until, by the way, the day I break my leg, then I'll buy it that morning. Well, that's a problem. So then the idea was, okay, we got to make everybody. But if you don't mind, Carl, we've talked about this. Let's talk about this some more one of these days, because it's a great topic. But what in terms of the tariffs, I couldn't wait to talk to you today, because on the way in, you know, I'm listening to radio, mind my own business, as the rat was running across in front of my car.
By the way, you're supposed to smush it when that happens.
He was pretty quick. I'd have been pretty quick. He was pretty quick. I mean, Chicago's still got the the worst rat problem in the country. We're proud of that.
Yeah, okay.
anyway, so the you talk about the tariffs, and I went through a whole routine with Kevin regarding Nixon's wage price controls.
Right.
And how it ended up being this incredibly detailed thing, who could raise prices and why. The simpleton, the simple citizen, none of us are simple, but the simple citizen's approach, well, that means if I go in and buy gas next week, it's going to be the same price as this week. No.
Right.
Nothing is that simple. So now with the tariff stuff, on the way in this morning, we go to break here, it's going to be a long discussion, but they talk about a couple of companies, they interviewed people, and the guy says, well, we're moving our crap out of China. We'll talk about that as stage one after the break.
Right.
The other one was a guy saying he makes, sorry to repeat, but he makes cat litter. No, I know nothing. You know more about cat litter?
Right, no, because I have one, yeah.
And, but evidently, cat litter is made in China, which I never guessed because it's probably heavy to carry around. But evidently, one of the chemicals is only sourced in China?
It's the clumping stuff that requires that, and which, by the way, everybody wants to use because it's much better than just clay, which is the other alternative.
So now is his lobbyist on the phone? Hey, Donald, about
I'm
me?
Sure. Look, if you think that there isn't going to be game playing involved in that, boy, do you have come on, man, you don't even believe that.
No, but I'm saying, of course, the population does. A lot of people.
Well, the population believes a lot of things that aren't true. It's why we're in this mess.
Well, but it's also because this is what you and I, we watch for stuff like this, and I'm looking for companies that benefit and don't. We're in the business, but if you and I I'll use the term regular job, why would we even have any idea of this kind of detail and all this crap? But there is.
Oh, yeah.
My question to you is, well, and then we'll go to Braves, how much, if you and I own a, pick a company, a TV manufacturer in China.
Right.
Right, and also want to ask you a question about your iPhone thing. We own a TV manufacturer in China. What if we open up a place in Vietnam, Chief and Carl Inc. in Vietnam, and we import 90% of the pieces from China, yet we assemble it and make the stand in Vietnam? Now what? What is our chart?
This gets complicated, and it's in the of course the game. See, this is one of the reasons that when I wrote Leverage, I went into this in quite a bit of detail, and essentially, if you analyze this on we have standards, we have things that we believe we should do. You know, we don't believe. That it is appropriate to have Love Canal in a backyard. Okay? We do not accept that as Americans. In the 1950s, maybe we did, but we don't accept it as Americans today. And we also...
in the 50s, we thought it was just dirty. We didn't know it was hazardous.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. But I'm saying we've come to the understanding that this is not an acceptable practice. Okay? We've also come to the understanding over the space of, 100 years or so after the country was formed, that slavery is not an acceptable practice, and therefore those are two things that we consider to be American values, all right, and we think they're important. Okay, so if you, now, over the last 10, 15 years since Leverage was published, I've added a third category to this, which is the monetary game playing, because guess what? We've been doing plenty of it, and so has everybody else, including China.
But if it's all done together...
Well,
you can disguise it pretty good.
Well, but it's different. But there's a differential element to it, okay? And just like there was a differential element to us. I mean, we do still emit some things into the environment, way less than anybody else these days. All of the growth in the bad stuff is over in Asia. If you put in a tariff system that just says, China bad, spank him, all right? But
which is what we did last time, pretty much.
Well, but I, as a manufacturer, can put the same polluting thing that is the legitimate justification for doing it, and the slavery, into Vietnam. Okay.
By the way, are there, I'll say, factory worker, the rules for people working, are they better than China? Or we just hope they are or think they are?
Well, there's there is a scale of unnice.
Well, they don't they're not enslaving the Uyghur like they are in China. The whole group of that old people, right?
Right. There's, I mean, there is a substantial difference in that, you know, Vietnam doesn't have, for example, a system where if you say something bad about the government, you know, your cell phone gets flagged and you can't get on a train or an airplane anymore. All right. China does that sort of crap. Even today, you probably cannot get on my site, my blog, from China because I say bad things about Z once in a while, and therefore I'm blackballed as far as China goes. You know, that kind of stuff. And oh, by the way, if you circumvent it and they catch you, they'll throw you in jail for it. And not only will they screw you, they'll screw the rest of your family members.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Right. Well, and I mean, and they track the people over here in the United States who come here on student visas and stuff, and they'll punish your family if you do something.
Yeah, they don't want to give you 80 grand for college and have you badmouth them, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, but the thing is that they do things that we consider to be ridiculously reprehensible, and yet, you know, oh, yeah, they're our best friends when it comes
to... Yeah, well, that's...
Come on, guys. But so there is a degree of it, okay? There is a difference in degree. But... The reality of it is that you know, some of the worst abuses when it comes to worker protections and things like that have been places like Bangladesh, where they've had horrible factory fires in sweatshops that make T-shirts.
Yeah,
I mean, there
are people, and that saying race or anything is involved, but there are people that have a much different view of human life and human pain than others.
Chief,
is that a nice way to say it?
Yes, I will categorize that further because I've done an awful lot of both business and had social interaction with people from all over the world. And I will tell you that the American view of this is almost completely unique. And if there's a lot of degree to it and there's a lot of nuance to it. But in the general sense,
well, it's Europe and us.
It's Europe to a lesser extent than it used to be. But yes, it's Europe as it used to be before they got invaded by a third of the African continent. But if you, which by the way they allowed under the name of so-called compassion, it hasn't worked out very well for them.
Compassion and cheap labor.
Funny how that works. But you know, If you go over to the Philippines, for example, and you think that, you know, because the Philippines is very largely Catholic, right? A lot of people think that means that, oh, you know, this is virtue. they have about as much value on human life as a pack of Coke.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's just as bad, if not worse, through most of Asia. So
yeah, the Filipinos that are here are just like us because they're here for a reason, and that's the reason.
Well, yeah, they're here for a reason, and that's why.
Yeah.
And if you've ever done a business or had social interaction with them, they'll tell you that's why.
Well, without a doubt. I'm here because it was horrible where I left. Duh.
I mean, I'm here because it sucked. Right. I mean,
hey,
let's go to break.
SPV is down 3, NASDAQ is down 60. Be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 2. Looks like we're coming back here. NASDAQ futures down 55. So again, we're not, after how much we've been up the last couple of days, this is like a pittance. We're in Europe, 135 down on the DAX, that's 0.7%. FTSE down 44.5. CAC around down 63.9. Remember yesterday we lowered the announced rate from down a quarter point, but as Carl was saying, the actual market rate, which the Fed does control by money in and out of the system. They've been pouring money in the system, and by the way, that causes more money in there, which means the cost of that money drops. It's all part of the same program. Yesterday they pretty much announced that, by the way, we're lowering it, but they really should have said, we've already lowered it, we're just matching it up. But anyway, that's another story. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 118.3%, Hang Seng down 225, 1.1%. Up and down in Hang Seng, Shanghai down 18.5%. Yesterday, these numbers, Dow was down 59 cents, so there's a couple stocks that were down. S&P was up 44, and the NASDAQ was up 285, that's another 1.5%. Bonds down 2 basis points, they're coming back here a little bit, they were down 4 earlier. Bonds, 10-year rates, 4.32, that actually means the bonds are up. Bunds down 5 basis points, 2.39. Japan down 1.999. Can't get much closer to 1 without being at 1. Oil down $1.17, 71.19. Smack dab in the middle of this like 67 to 74 range. Brent down 103, 74.60. Natural gas up 2 cents, 271. RBOB down 2 cents, 202. Gold down $4, but still above 2,700. Silver down 6 cents, 31.79. Copper down 9 cents, 434. These guys have all been buffeted around by the dollar, going down from, was a 111 in the euro, now it's down to 107.4. It doesn't seem much to somebody in the Midwest with just regular money in your pocket, but a 3 or 4% move in the dollar is a big deal. British pound hasn't moved as much as the euro. It's 129. I think they topped out at 131, so they're down maybe 1.5%, not 3.5% like the euro. Crypto's been on a tear here, but not today. Down 649, 75,989. Is Trump supposed to be good for crypto? Whatever the hell that means. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:41 a.m. here in Chicago. 43 degrees right now with a high of 60. Mostly sunny, and tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 45 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 46 degrees right now with a high of 69. Plenty of sunshine, but cool. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 45 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 30 minutes. We're looking at about 46 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 35 minutes. Inbound Dan Bryan from 95th, some 23 minutes. And 33 minutes, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Bryan. NFL Week 10 yesterday, the Ravens beat the Bengals 35-34. And this Sunday, November 10, we have the Patriots at Bears playing in Soldier Field, Chicago at 12 p.m. And then we have the Jets at Cardinals at 3:25 p.m. Yesterday, the Bulls lost to the Timberwolves 119-135. Today, we got the Suns playing the Mavericks at 6:30 p.m. Lastly, NHL, Blackhawks lose to Stars 1-3.
So, Carl, we know. And I don't expect you to be an expert on this, but I think you probably know more than me. We know that people have been able to do stuff in terms of money that I'll say, as I had my argument with my buddy Dr. J, it's not illegal, but it's really not really legal because nobody ever thought about it. And, oh, by the way, it sure doesn't pass any kind of smell test if you have any kind of nose. And I'm talking about, like, you know, I'll use the term 1,000 Starbucks in London, 3 in Amsterdam, and I think I'm exaggerating there, but somehow or another we bring the coffee beans to London through Amsterdam, and we make all our money on the bean price in Amsterdam and not on the coffee in London. So it looks like we're making all our money in Amsterdam instead of London, when really we're selling all the coffee in London. Now, if you believe that, I got a bridge for you. But now, my question is, tariffs, you mentioned earlier. And again, whenever you say something, it always brings up another question. I'm not calling you simple. The simple thing you said was, if it's 100% tariff on China and Apple brings in a $1,000 cell phone, somebody pays a $1,000 tax and the retail price is going to be $2,000. Now I'm going to ask, whoa. What if we bring the cell phone in from China at a $100 transfer price, we buy it from Apple China for $100, and we put the screen on it here that we say costs us $900 to do, and we sell it for $1,000. Is the tariff $2,000 or $100?
Well,
$1,000 or $100.
Well, this depends on whether or not the people who put the tariff together are intelligent. I mean, you know, yeah.
Or there's a lobbyist involved.
Right.
They could be very intelligent, right?
Well, you know, I mean, remember all the scheming and scamming, double Dutch to put their,
yeah.
you know, your, all your operating income in Bermuda, you know, nonsense like
I
this.
I remember Nixon's crap and how stuff kept going up, but it was all okay some places and wasn't other places.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is, well, I mean, Nixon's crap is a big part of how we ended up with so-called health insurance embedded into employment, because the provision of fringe benefits was not covered by the wage controls.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And so this was one of the big drivers. Well,
there can't be a name, but who's
it? It wasn't the start of it, by the way. The start of that goes back to like the 1950s with the ERISA, you know, law implementation. It said that you could take it as an above the line deduction as a business. But what made it really attractive was you couldn't give people a raise because that was forbidden.
Right.
But what you could do is give them a you know, the equivalent of a raise in fringe benefits. It's
that's what I'm saying. It ends up being a real mess.
Well, people always try to dodge. I mean, you know, everyone always looks for a loophole, right? That's not surprising.
Well, Kevin, you know, is a huge supporter of which is fine. But his idea that Trump is going to use this as a bargaining chip.
Well, it's a negotiating weapon.
Except if you actually do it, somebody's got to come up with the 90 bazillion details. I actually was, when he did it, I remember doing this, I was on the show. Somehow or another, I don't know, Carl, he lobbed something out there, and I don't think it was you, because usually you do this stuff to me. Somebody sent me a link to the tariffs, the tariff Bible, or whatever you want to call it. It is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I went through, I was reading on here. I remember reading, I was reading. I don't know where the hell I found it. It's somewhere buried.
Chief, you'd have to have an entire division in your company to figure out
this
exactly.
This is not something you do put together for 3 months to piss off the Chinese and then take it back.
I mean, no, not at all.
I mean, I was reading through there. I mean, I think the page I got that I was, there had to be 50 different types of cottage cheese. Small curd, something, something, milk
right.
fat, small. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of pages. And just and I'm sitting there going, somebody somewhere has basically, you know, an erection on this line. There's got to be some farmer someplace in Vermont that imports small curd cottage cheese less than 25% milk fat or something. Somebody got to somebody that had a line in there that there was no tariff for this guy.
Yeah.
Yet the one above it, large curd, 40%.
He gets hammered.
He gets
right.
hammered. I mean, this is insanity. detail. Not the idea of a tariff.
No, I understand that, Chief, and that's why, you know, when I wrote Leverage and the way that I laid it out is you don't do that. Okay. Of course, we all know how the sausage gets made in D.C., and therefore, you can have the best of intentions and you end up with the worst of outcomes. At the core, what we have to do, and if Trump is going to in some way try to blunt what's coming, because the insanity of the last several years, and he started it with the COVID stuff.
I think it started in 2000, but you and I are off on that.
Well, it did. Okay,
certainly
but I'm
after 2008, we shifted
yes.
gears. We went from first gear to second gear in 2008.
Yeah, and then we added nitrous to the engine in 2020. Okay,
yep.
So you know, and then just because there's an election on, Janet Yellen throws better than $500 billion into the economy in a week and a half after the end of the fiscal year.
Yep.
Okay, which is utter
insanity.
Well,
they've been pushing it since June.
I know, but I'm just saying. But they, you know. But boy, oh boy, did they, you know, they added that extra. You ever seen the Mad Max movie when he, you know, he takes a swig of gas and breathes it down the intake of the supercharger?
How do you think it is the last month? The last money supply number we got was September, right? So we don't even have October.
Yeah, I don't have, well, and we don't have, you know, a more current MTS, although we will in a few days because, you know, it's the way it works. It's, you know, the second week is usually when it comes out. If the only way you're going to solve this, and this is just mathematical analysis, it's nothing to do with politics, the entire operating deficit of the federal government is in CMS last year, all of it. Okay. Now, you cannot, and I really got into it with an associate of mine who says, oh, well, what they'll do is they'll just take Medicaid and throw it in the trash can. And I said, you do realize that if you do something like that and you leave the basic system alone, you have solved exactly nothing. Politically, it's suicidal.
Without a doubt. Oh, yeah.
Okay. But you've also solved exactly nothing, because all you're going to do is shift that cost somewhere else within the system. You've not addressed the cost problem. All you've done is said, okay, just like the same situation that you have with, oh, well, you know, you're an illegal alien. You come into the country. You all of a sudden need a medical procedure. Guess what? You don't have any money. You don't have any insurance. Too damn bad for the rest of everybody else. You get it, and everyone else pays for it. All right? And you know, and by the way, when you take all this and you add all this balance up, it's a couple hundred billion dollars a year, net-net, on the negative side, which is bad because that increases the deficit, and that, of course, creates the inflation. So,
but then again, well, we don't have time. Your story, but one of these days we're going to have to talk about do something that's near to dear in my heart, is cost accounting. These numbers are all screwed up. You know that.
Well, of course they are. But yeah. You know what? I have to work with the balance sheet and the cash flow statement that I got, right? Okay, you want to say fraud? Well, guess what? We're going to find out about that with NVIDIA and SMCI here, I think, sometime in the next couple weeks, too. But what I have said all the way along is that and we don't need new laws to deal with this, because this conduct is illegal. And it was ruled illegal in the late 1970s in a decision out of the United States Supreme Court called Royal Drug. And then the pharmaceutical and medical industry came back with a second bite of the apple, tried to get around it again with a physicians group in Arizona, and they got swatted in a decision that is called Maricopa County. So the Supreme Court has twice said that...
The Supreme Court that has zero ability to enforce anything.
But the Supreme Court, that's right, they can't enforce it. However, the Department of Justice sure as hell can.
Well, but we've had a succession of presidents
that have not done it.
Well, no, but they also have, because there's a gazillion laws on the books. The first thing somebody does, and I'm not singling Trump out for this, which ones am I going to enforce? Which one am I going to ignore?
Chief, these are there's no fines here. Look. The collusion, long-standing law, is that the provision of something, a physical good, this is Robinson Patman, of like kind and quantity, cannot have discriminatory pricing.
Which is common sense to everybody. And fairness.
And it is, and that's the end of the conversation. Okay.
But
now here's the thing. If you enforce that, in other words, your local hospital has to publish a price and has to charge everybody the same amount. Now, what you get back from your insurance company is between you and the insurance company. But what you can't do legally, and this was established over 100 years ago with antitrust law 15 USC, is that you cannot, for example, charge me a different amount of gasoline for gasoline based on who my car insurance company is. That's it. That's a felony.
Okay, well, please stop for a second. You know, you get no disagreement from me.
Well, wait.
But roll with me for a second. There's Carl, and me, and probably most of the listeners, and clearly the rest of the people around the show, that agree with you 100%. 99% of this population has no idea what you're talking about. It's so endemic in their lives.
I know that, but look. If you want to solve this problem, all right, you frog march a half dozen hospital executives and pharmaceutical company executives out of their offices in cuffs, and you throw them in jail for 10 years.
Okay, but
the entire problem goes away in an afternoon.
How is it? It's the same thing.
Let me give you another tuition. I know, but let me give you another example. Well, yeah, and it's illegal there too. Let me give you another example. And this is one of the things that showed up during the COVID shot thing. The insurance companies have a bribe to pediatricians' offices and general physicians for compliance levels with the vaccine schedules. You get a bonus as a physician's office if you meet those metrics, percentage of your patients that have taken them. That is an illegal tied sale. That is a felony.
Without a doubt.
And if you enforce it, and if you want to know why your pediatrician will fire you, if you tell them, look, I don't think you should give my kid 8 shots in one day. Okay? Give him 1 shot. We'll come back in 3 months.
They'll probably do that. They'll probably separate.
No, they won't. And the reason is they won't get the money.
Okay, because I used to be.
Okay,
used to be you could ask them to do that. I believe from people.
Well,
I know
not anymore
kids.
Because now all the insurance companies have these so-called incentive payments. Well, those are illegal. They are a felony because they create a tied sale. In order for you to get something you want, which is medical care, be able to go in a pediatrician's office and have the doctor look at your kid, you have to buy something you don't want. That is illegal.
Okay.
And it has been ruled illegal a dozen times. IBM
got smacked
over this.
Do me a favor. I agree with you. Everybody agrees with you. But let's pile out of the detail, because we can, both of us can rant on what's wrong with the medical stuff until cows come home. Let me for a second. I'm trying to figure out, as this election, some people didn't appeal to anybody on much of anything. Some people really took, in my opinion, the low road and appealed to people's id instead of their ego. In terms of, you know, these people are getting money and you're not, whatever. I don't want to go into that. But I'm saying, how is it that you can sit down, especially with some younger people, and if you said what you just said, they have no friggin' idea what you're talking about. Now, sometimes I've done this and I say, say for instance, you walked in tomorrow to buy a 6-pack of beer, which most young people do. I don't think they drink beer much anymore, but you say how much, and the guy says how much you got.
Right.
I mean, how the guy would say, why would anybody do that? And I said, why do you think when you go to apply for college or you go into a hospital, it's a little more complicated in the hospital part, but basically it's that.
Right.
And it's right. And that is so insane, and yet it's been around so long. I mean, I asked the stupid question of, you know, if you came to, say you did the show 2 days a week from PTI, and you got off the train, you walked across the bridge, and somebody walked up and kicked you right in the ass every day.
Yeah.
Well, after 10 years of it, does it become normal?
Still
not nice.
And you know, but see, this
still
is...
Still not nice,
this is,
but, it, but th- this is what... I mean, I want to take what you're saying down to the basic level. How is it people don't even, they don't even understand the idea that the colleges dish out the loans and all that kind of crap, and you should go to Notre Dame and say, how much is college? And they should say,
this
40
much.
Grand.
Right.
And it's up to me to either get the loan, bug my uncle, bug my grandmother.
Well, by the way, Obama did that. He forced all of it into the federal government so you couldn't do that anymore.
Well, I think he did it because there were two rates.
Oh, so
the government rate was cheaper than the other rate. Oh, I'm saying,
right, so
I don't know what the motivation was, but the point is,
he did it.
But I'm saying the idea that they should be together, or the hospital should be doing anything other than taking your appendix out and charging you for it, is insane.
Chief, all of it, all of the problems that we have in this regard, and the driver of all of the inflation from a federal perspective, okay, from the deficit spending perspective, every bit of it has been in CMS over the last 40 years. And when I was running MCS, I found this trend in the data. I realized what it was going to do. I started making a lot of noise about it with my staff members. We had an all-employee meeting once a year, and I went over all of this stuff. And I said, look, I'm not telling you who to vote for or what you do politically, but if we do not address this, number one, it's going to destroy American industry and competitiveness. Number two, it's going to bankrupt the country. Number three, it's going to bankrupt you, because the inflation ultimately that will be caused by this is going to come back at you, and there's no way around that. The only thing you can do is stop it. Now, how you choose to attack this and whether you choose to do anything about it and stop it is, of course, an individual decision. But this is what's happening. I have to react to it as a business person. I have to work within it to the best of my ability as a CEO.
Well, before Carl was in business, it was worse than you're talking about.
Oh, I understand. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying I was, you know, that this was some revelation that came out of the middle. It's been going on for a lot longer.
Well, when we first started PTI in 1991, one of our first clients was kind of you'd have loved him, Carl. Talk about a character, a guy from Arizona. Actually, he was originally from Columbus, Indiana. Owned some businesses down there. Was a POW, World War II. He was a navigator in a B-24 that got shot down or something. I don't know. But anyway, he had this plant in Columbus. I never even asked him what the hell they made. They made something, obviously. And I think he had, I'm going to say, 250 employees, somewhere in that range. It wasn't like 1,000, but it was quite a few. And he decided, instead of paying insurance, you know, like the Blue Cross sort of thing, I don't know if he had a nurse in the place or not. I don't know the details, but he basically went to Lloyd's or someplace and got an umbrella policy.
Yeah.
For somebody, the thing that costs absolutely the most, by far, is if somebody has a kid that needs care whole life. You know, some.
Oh God! Oh God! Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's worse than cancer, worse than heart disease, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And but this is before you had the $25,000 drugs and things like that and all that kind of crap, and he basically got this policy, and the money he used to pay into Blue Cross or whatever, he put it into a special account. And they just, when somebody went to the doctor, they just paid it.
Right.
He said that was the biggest profit center in his firm for the next 5 years. But then he said all of a sudden everybody else is getting different deals in the hospital than I'm getting. So the appendectomy for me is $10,000, for somebody else it's $5,000. You can't do it anymore. If PTI had 300 people, in a real world, we should be able to get an umbrella policy for $100,000 deductible for the firm or $200,000, whatever it is. Put the rest of the money in like we're doing other stuff. And unless we had like a real bad year where 10 people needed open heart surgery or something, I think we make money every year.
Yeah, yeah.
But not if my appendectomy is $20,000 and yours is two.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Let me ask you, we got a dash here, but maybe for Tuesday. This is so egregious, so out of whack. Does the government, oh God, me being, even though Hal accuses me of not being, I'm almost as much of a libertarian as he is, and you are. I mean, I keep it hidden, but I am. I mean, somebody who traded 20 years in the trading floor, went through Chicago, is pretty much an academic libertarian, right?
Well, you'd think.
I mean, I wonder if it's almost at the point where, with this insurance and all this other kind of stuff, that county hospital, I actually think people have gone there and said, the cares are pretty damn good. Why not have, even though there's a bunch of them around now, why don't we have five, let's say, MRI places, there's actually a bunch of them, so it's probably a bad example, that the government finances, I won't say runs, and lets people who maybe with medical loans and so forth work there, pay off some of the loans. Why don't we just advertise that, by the way, we'll do your MRI for $500 with competent people? We almost seems like we need the competition. You can't just say we need competition because it's difficult for the competition to get going. Right now,
well, except that the competitors exist. You just, what you have to do is you have to say, if you don't stop colluding, you're going to go to prison. And oh, by the way, all of a sudden you have competitors.
But because
I mean, look,
not paying, you don't need to do that for you and me when somebody else has a case of beer for $3 cheaper, we're going to go get it. But if there's no communication and we're not paying for it, if we bought beer insurance, we don't care.
But this is why you have to break that connection between those things, okay? Because as long as that connection is there, then the scam continues.
But I wonder, my libertarian part, I'm asking, we'll do this more on Tuesday, just finding a lower-cost place, does that bring down the monolith that is Northwestern or Rush on its own? I don't think you're ever going to be able to attack. I mean, Trump, he's got 4 years. There's no way he spends all four attacking the insurance and hospitals.
No, he doesn't have to attack. Chief, he doesn't have to attack anybody. All he's got to do is arrest about 10 of them, and the problem will go away.
Okay, let's talk about more. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 61. I don't know if we'll rally up here today, but even if we stay here, it's been one hell of a week for the bulls. Anyway, everybody have a nice weekend. Back together, back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.